The show is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. We're brought to you in part by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jam, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. On the show today, we have in the first part a live performance of at least a couple of songs by Somi, who is an African-American artist who is on the University of Illinois campus this week at the Krannert Center, giving a number of performances and participating in some outreach. She's in the studio with us. And then in the second part of the program, a conversation with Paul Melling of the Hot Club of San Francisco, who are going to be at the Doudna Fine Arts Center in Charleston tonight at 7:30, accompanying some silent films in a program called Silent Surrealism. Hope you'll find that it's a good program for you today. Stay with us on Live and Local. As a performance by Somi, who is an artist here who actually is from these parts originally, on the campus of the University of Illinois, at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, giving a number of performances there. It opened last night and continuing through Saturday, and 7:30 performances, and also doing some outreach here on the U of I campus. And this is from her disc called If the Rain Comes First. Changing Inspiration is the name of the tune, and she's going to be with a number of performers, although on this show she's with us now with one of the artists who's going to be with her on the concert. First of all, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin.
You and I had the pleasure to meet, I don't even remember how many years ago it was. Do you remember?
That was in 2008.
Really? You remember that?
That was in the summer of 2008. I was here for some time.
Wow. Really? That was, I didn't think it was that recently. And you're actually from around here.
I am. My family is originally from East Africa, from Uganda and Rwanda, but I grew up mostly in Champaign. I was born here while my father was doing his postdoctoral fellowship at the University of Illinois in veterinary medicine. And then we left, and then we came back, and he was a professor for 27 years. So I went to like all of my primary and secondary education was here, and then my I went to the University of Illinois for my undergraduate degree.
What was your major?
Anthropology and African Studies.
Which you've obviously made a lot of use of.
Well, it was cultural anthropology, so I would like to believe that I'm still committed to that type of work.
Well, I mean, obviously so. I mean, music comes as part of culture, but
absolutely.
Also, I mean, you've really focused on the African side of your background, I guess.
Well, I'd like to think that I focus on all sides of my background. I think that I'm deeply influenced by American music like jazz and soul. And so that definitely comes into my songwriting, and it definitely comes into the music that I'm drawn to and the musicians that I work with, one of whom you'll meet at least audibly. he's a pianist. And so there are a number of jazz musicians that I gravitate towards in New York City, and I believe that's mostly because of my American background. Obviously, I'm very connected to my East African roots and heritage as well, so that definitely comes into the music linguistically and rhythmically and otherwise.
You said linguistically. Do you sing in various African languages?
I sing primarily in English, but I also sing in three other East African languages, Swahili, Kinyarwanda, and Rutoro.
And how long have you known those? I mean, did you grow up knowing some of those?
Well, my mother is Ugandan, and she speaks a language. Her language is Rutoro, from the western part of Uganda. And so I grew up, I'm actually most, I would say, fluent. Not really fluent, but I'm best at Rutoro because she spoke more of that at home. She was the one who was at home mostly. And my father spoke a language called Kinyarwanda, which is a language spoken in Rwanda. And I'm familiar with that. It's from the same language family, the Bantu language group. So they're very similar in a lot of ways. And Swahili, I actually learned here on the University of Illinois campus. I studied it for 4 years. And by the time I left, I was tutoring it. And so I'm actually best at, in terms of writing, in Swahili.
So you didn't, you weren't really a bilingual household or trilingual in your case?
I would say that we definitely were, but I don't know that the children were.
Well, that's what I meant. Oh, I should have said you weren't really trilingual yourself growing up.
Well, some ways. I mean, I think I totally understand what's happening, and we didn't always exercise the speaking aspect. And because my parents were from two different ethnic groups, they often talked in English to one another when they first got married. But now, then over the years, they became fluent in both their languages. But at that point, we were grown and also just sort of comprehending, and so not as fluent as they were.
When did you make the conscious decision to, if the decision was conscious at any point in time, to sing in various languages, but also particularly to sing very much from the African side in addition to the American side?
Well, I just again wanted to present a whole sort of image and perspective of myself and my influences. And even though, you know, as I said, I lived here in Champaign most of my life, my family was very much an African home that I grew up in, which I grew up. And we were very plugged into the African community. I'm still very plugged into the African community here in Champaign-Urbana. Mm. Many of those people are professors or were students here and have made their lives here. And so I'm very much connected to the African experience, both here in the West and also back home. We have the majority of my family still lives in East Africa. We just came back from the holidays over there, and I go at least once a year. So I'm still very much connected to it. And so I think to deny that would be to deny a very large part of myself, culturally and spiritually.
And when did you start actively pursuing music at all?
Well, I started studying the cello when I was about 8 here in Champaign at Bottenfield Elementary School.
Who was your teacher?
Mr. Katz was the teacher at the time. He's the one who came and introduced. I think they had just started offering music, or at least stringed instruments, in public schools here, in Unit 4 schools in Champaign. And they just came in and they demonstrated all the different instruments. And I was like, I want to play the bass. And they were like, you're too little. Why don't you start with the cello? So I started with the cello. But I actually love the cello, and I believe that I learned a great deal from the cello. People say it's the closest instrument to the human voice. So that's when I first really began to study music. But I had always been involved in, you know, choir at church, not as a soloist, or, you know, musical activities. And actually, my first primary school experience was actually in Zambia before we came to Bottenfield, where I started second grade. But my first 2 years in primary school in Zambia, I was very involved in musical theater as a very young child. When I got here, I became a bit stage fright. I had a bit of stage fright because of my accent. At the time, I had a very strong British accent, and I think I hid my voice behind the cello and decided that would be my musical outlet. I don't know that I was so conscientious of it at the time, but it ended up being sort of my musical sort of outlet at the time. And eventually, I found my way to singing.
Yeah, when did you find your solo vocal voice?
Well, I started singing again in college, actually. My last years of undergrad at University of Illinois, I started participating in musical theater productions that, you know, the annual or the semester, they always have like one big thing at Assembly Hall. And so I started participating in those, the later part of my experience at University of Illinois. And that's when I started, you know, toying with the fantasy, because it had always been a fantasy to be a singer, but it was never something that I thought was a real option. And that was mostly because I didn't have artists, per se, in my family or in, you know, people that I could look to and say, oh, that's an option as a professional route. And so it was just sort of always a fantasy or a dream. And but I began to kind of take it more seriously when I moved to New York. After college, I moved to East Africa for some time. I had a fellowship out there, and I really was able to answer a lot of the cultural questions that can sort of burden an immigrant, a first-generation American child, and who's really trying to understand and connect with roots. And I was able to answer a lot of those questions. And I think once I was clear about those questions of where I was from, then I was able to really see where I wanted to go, and that was towards the music.
And, excuse me, discovering different types of music for yourself. Or let's back up. When did you start writing songs?
When did I start writing songs? Well, I started writing poetry at a very young age. And so I always believe that but it was always for myself. You know, it was never something that I would share publicly. It was more about like my own sort of way of dealing with emotions and dealing with sort of letting things out that I needed to get out of, you know, my own heart. And but it was a very private sort of experience, and I never shared it. Even on campus, I never shared my poetry. I did start writing songs. There's a singer, actually, an opera singer, professional opera singer in New York named Amy Elizabeth Treat, and she's also from Champaign. And she and I were very close friends as kids, and she also went to Bonfield. And she and I used to write songs together, make up little mini musicals. And so I think my earliest recollection of writing music was probably, I was probably around 9. We started like writing songs, but we would perform them for ourselves or our mothers, you know, not for the public. But she's now, as I said, she's now a professional opera singer. And doing quite well.
And the songs that you sing now are mostly your own composition or a mix?
No, they're all original songs. I write all of the lyrics and melodies, and I usually collaborate with musicians like Mr. Toro Dodo, who's here today, on the arrangements and the sort of harmonic arrangements, as I said.
And the mix of styles that you've described before, a bit of jazz, world music, soul, other things you can't describe.
Well, world music is such a broad thing.
It is.
To call it the music of the world. So.
Well, it has meant, you know, music of places other than the United States to those of us here, but it could be even within the United States, lots of different types of styles.
Sure. I mean, I would say the strongest influences are different parts of Africa. I would say both East and West Africa. So it's actually, I actually reach from a lot of different styles within the African context. I don't know that there's not one particular place. I couldn't even pinpoint one specific, you know, place in Uganda or Rwanda as the only place that I kind of go to. I mean, I've worked with Senegalese musicians, Ivorian musicians, Nigerian musicians. So all of those people bring their own elements and influences into it as well. But definitely distinctly African. And also, I would definitely say jazz is a huge part of it. And I say soul not in the Aretha Franklin sense of soul, but soul in sense of just honest, you know, songwriting. That's really what I mean when I'm talking about soul music, just truth-telling.
Well, so often soul music, you know, call it soul if a black person sings it.
Right, which is not
what
I'm
saying.
Which is
not what you're
talking about. And I also come from a very different kind of black narrative in the States. You know, it's not sort of heteronormative, you know, African-American experience. My experience is very different. Even though I identify myself as a black woman who grew up in the States, but I have a very different sort of cultural and historical context, and I think that that also informs the music.
Well, you're more directly African American than the average African American.
Just like Obama.
I, you know, that's a much better link than mine with Obama, that's that we both have Blackberries. So you got me beat there by quite a long
time.
I don't know where that came from. Let's hear you sing something.
Okay.
I think that you were planning to do that.
Yes.
Right. And you're going to be with a combo consisting of Mr. Toro Dodo, who is with you now on mm-hmm. piano, and also
three others, yes. Steve Belvilleus is a drummer from Guadeloupe. David Gilmore is a guitarist from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Keith Whitty is a bass player from New York City. But we all live in New York. And Toro is from Tokyo.
And
he's here today.
What are you going to sing for us?
We're going to sing a song called Wallflower Blues.
Any background required?
Would you like to snap a finger? Oh, background
I
on the song.
Could. No, well, yeah, that's what I meant. I mean, I suppose if you want me to snap, I've been known to play percussion in here before. But
I'm just teasing.
I just assume not.
Any,
but
background?
Yeah, any background?
I'm just telling a story. It's hopefully you'll hear the story in the song, in the lyrics.
Somi here on Live and Local with pianist Toru Dodo. She's going to be at the Krannert Center tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 at the Studio Theater in a nice, intimate sort of cabaret setting. Food available, drinks and so on. And yeah, drinks. Oh, they're all nodding. Yes, drinks. Somi here on Live and Local.
They say that silence is golden, but she knows it can be blue. Well, our story is as dry and there's just no getting through to you. These are the memories of a wallflower. If only she could reach for a new hand, a new dance, a new man. These are the memories of a wallflower. But she sits still, careful not to blush or stare. She waits for you, she waits for you, she waits for you. She waits for you, she waits for you, she waits for you. Bidding tong tang, stealing gold, sticking gold, stealing gold. Stink on gate, stink on, stick on it, or it, but in don't, pin pape, but in don't, stick on corerum, but in don't, stick on cake, but in don't, stick on it, or it, but in don't. They say that silence is golden, but she knows it can be blue. Well, love stories is dry. There's just no getting through to you. These are the memories of a wallflower, ready to unveil a plastic gown and lay down a concrete heart. These are the memories of a wallflower, but she sits still behind her fallen copper crown. She waits for you, she waits for you, she waits for you. She waits for you, she waits for you, she waits for you. Pink and blue and green and yellow, she splashed against the wall. She's begun to bloom and wander. Spring's happening twice before the fall. Ask her to dance and she'll be sweet. Ask her to dance and you'll fly away. Ask her to dance and she'll be sweet. Ask her to dance and you'll fly away.
Just beautiful. Both of you. Somi, vocalist.
Thank you.
Who wrote the music and the words, and Toru Dodo on the piano. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's just beautiful sound.
Thank you.
I mean, everything about the sound of the voice, the expression, the fluidity, the lyrics themselves.
Really.
I remember when we met once before and we were talking about a possible orchestral collaboration. Have you done any orchestral work?
Toru did some string arrangements on my last album, and I've performed some things but not a whole orchestra, but definitely a string sort of chamber experience, more like that.
And I seem also to remember that the music I had heard when we talked before was a little more, not even sure how to describe it, less jazzy seeming than what you're doing now. Is that... Have you progressed in that direction, or am I?
I don't know that I've progressed in a particular direction. I would like to think that I've progressed. I think that that's the goal of any artist, right? That we continue to grow and change and shift and be true to, you know, whatever it is that we're feeling. So I don't know that I made a conscientious decision to move closer to jazz, but I would like to think that, you know, hopefully I would be happy to hear that you've heard some progression in the past couple of years.
Well, I should say, I mean, I really like what I've heard.
Okay, great.
So, you know, I'd have to go back and listen to some of the earlier ones to sort of remind myself. But in any event, Somi's going to be at the Krannert Center for performances tonight and tomorrow. But you're also here in Champaign-Urbana doing some outreach.
Yes.
Projects or events. Do you want to talk about those at all?
Sure. Well, essentially, Krannert Center asked, you know, well, because I'm from the community, would I like to do anything? And I know that that's a huge part of their work and what they normally do as well. And obviously, it's very special to me being from here and having been raised here. So I went to Bottenfield Elementary, where I went to school a couple of days ago, and was able to share music with those kids, and they were able to share a few songs with me, and we just sort of were able to have a conversation, which was really great. And everything was so much smaller than I remembered.
Did you sit in any of the chairs?
No.
Or try to?
That room was just so tiny. I just remember it as being huge, so it was nice to be there. I also went to the Carl Cancer Center, where my mother was a nurse for several years. She retired last year. And my father, who passed at the end of 2009, he also received care there as well. So it was nice to be able to go and you know, offer something to the space and to the patients who are still struggling with cancer and going through that journey, and the caregivers there who are, you know, whether they're families, members, or people who actually work there. So that was nice to be able to be there. It was pretty emotional for me, but I'm definitely glad that we were able to do that. What else? We're going to Garden Hills today to do something else at another school, elementary school here in Champaign. I also had the opportunity to meet a number of vocal jazz students here at the university. They came to our sound check yesterday, and we were able to talk afterwards, and they asked a number of questions. And so that was really great to be able to connect with the university students.
Did you get a chance to hear any of them sing?
I didn't. I didn't have a chance to hear them, but they were able to talk to me about what it is that they're doing, and hopefully some of them will come out tonight. One of them had a gig or something last night, which was great.
So there's lots of jazz gigs around here, that's for sure.
Yeah, so they were lovely and enthusiastic, and that's just wonderful to see. And the vocal jazz program is very new here on campus, so that's great that that's now here. And so those are the type of things. I'm doing one other, I think Saturday will be, I'll be speaking and performing as part of the Martin Luther King celebrations that are going on here in the city. And that's it, I think.
And how long are you around till?
I'm here until Sunday, although I might stay a bit longer to hang out with my mom, because I've just been so busy these past few days. So I am staying at home, but everybody's like, where's the band staying? And I'm always like, in the basement. But I'm kidding. They're not. They're not. They're in a hotel.
Nice accommodations you provide there in the Krannert Center.
I'm just kidding. No, but...
I knew times were hard, but really...
No, so I'm trying to enjoy, you know, just being around family and friends, and so many people have come out and supported. Last night was great to see so many old faces and friends of, you know, of mine and my parent, my friends' parents and things like that. So that was really nice.
Well, in case there are people listening who are familiar with the story of this person that we're talking about but don't recognize the name Somi.
Yes.
They might know the name Laura Kakoma.
Yes.
Which is your birth name. Why Somi?
Well, Somi is short for one of my middle names, which is Kaba Somi, which is means child of a scholar. As I said, I was born when my father was finishing his postdoc, so circumstantial naming, which is very typical of Africans.
And why did you decide to go with that, with a one name?
It just sounded sweet and musical at the time when I chose it, and sometimes I'm like, maybe I should have just been Laura Kakoma, and you know, but you know. I've that's just now what my professional name is, and I'm fine with that.
And do some people still call you Laura?
Absolutely. A lot of people here in Champaign call me Laura. If you, I hope that you come to the show, and you'll definitely hear people in the lobby like, Laura!
But you're not going to do a John Cougar Mellencamp thing where you're going to be Laura Somi Kakoma, and then, you know, progress back.
To?
You know, well, to something else. You know, he got lots of different names and that got foisted on him, but you picked your own, so that's
well
different.
I mean, I just shortened my middle name. I mean, and I have no problem. I answer to Laura. My family calls me Laura still, so occasionally Kaba Somi, but for the most part I'm Laura to Champaign.
By any name, it's a sweet voice.
Thank you.
I'm really glad that you could come in and share it with us today.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I appreciate you having us on.
Somi and Toru Dodo on the piano. And they're going to be at the Kranert Center tonight, along with drummer Steve Belvilus, thank you. Bassist Keith Whitty and guitarist David Gilmore. For more information on Somi, you can go to SomiMusic.com, where it says Somi loves you, I think.
Yes, it does. I'm also on Facebook if you want to say hi
Facebook,
that way.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9, and our next guest is the guitarist leader of the Hot Club of San Francisco, who are going to be at the Doudna Fine Arts Center in Charleston tonight at Eastern Illinois University, accompanying some old silent films in a program called Silent Surrealism. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. We just heard a tune called La Gitane, which just means the gypsy, I think.
It means the gypsy woman.
The gypsy woman specifically. Well, that's an important thing.
Yes.
And just speaking there was Paul Melling, who is the leader and one of the guitarists with the Hot Club of San Francisco, or as they bill themselves in San Francisco, Le Jazz Hot.
Yes, we just do that when we're in San Francisco, though. And when we tour the world, we're the Hot Club of San Francisco.
And that's, I presume, because there are so many hot clubs around the world these days?
Yeah, and in a small way, we helped kind of launch a lot of that, because we've been doing this for 21 years now. And at the time that I started the band, there weren't too many bands in America doing this. In fact, the only other one that I know of was Pearl Django up in Seattle, and they pretty much disbanded. So we get the award for longevity.
Well, congratulations, and congratulations on your influence as well. I've talked with two different hot clubs now, Hot Club of Detroit.
Oh, yeah, I love Evan Perry's playing. He's a wonderful player.
Yeah, a friend of mine plays in there, the accordion player.
Jason.
Julian, there we go.
That's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, he's going to be playing with my orchestra here in April, which will be cool. And then also the Hot Club of Cowtown, which is a little bit different, I guess.
Yeah, I think their name is more of a tongue-in-cheek
Of
a thing.
It's more Western swing kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love Whit, and I love his playing, and we're good friends, but I think he chose that name just as a kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of thing, as I say.
Yeah, for the fun of it. Well, tell me about the hot phrase. There's an expression or a quote that you have on your website from somebody who influenced you, I guess, that gypsy music is full of emotion, and that's an important part of the music, and then here's the part I wanted. It's hot, mysterious, emotional, and romantic. What does hot mean in this case?
Well, there's, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, there was a movement on the West Coast here for cool jazz, and cool jazz was sort of, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum. The pendulum swung the other way, away from hot jazz. But when jazz started, it was party music back in the 19-teens and 1920s. It was just, you know, if you read The Great Gatsby, you kind of have an idea of young people with fast cars and a lot of money, and there weren't very many illegal drugs back in those days. So, you know, pretty much people that wanted to party were crazy, and jazz was part of it. That's why they call it the jazz age. People were partying like crazy, and so hot jazz just kind of exemplifies that rock and roll spirit that people like about rock and roll. This was before rock and roll, so.
But in this case, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's just, you know, it's sort of hot, like it's so hot that it sizzles under your feet and makes you want to dance. That's kind of a literal interpretation of what hot means.
But also the most hot clubs, if not all hot clubs, well, except maybe Cowtown, as you suggested, do have a pretty specific reference to music of Django Reinhardt, at least as an initial influence, right?
Yeah, that's not so much about the word hot as it is the term hot club.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Which Django's band was called the Hot Club of France. But the reason they were called a hot club is that the Hot Club of France was originally a group of record collectors that got together to share their hot jazz records. And they would sponsor concerts. And so at a certain point, they wanted to have a French band, and they hired Django to represent them as a record collectors group. And the group sponsored the concert, and hence the name Quintet of the Hot Club of France. So we all just sort of copy that name in homage to Django, you know. But I tell you the truth, before this craze and familiarity with the music, the name Hot Club of San Francisco wasn't really an easy name for people to understand. It's not good on the marquee. It takes up a lot of letters, you know. It was just kind of cumbersome and problematic. And through the years, it's become more familiar for people that's a good thing now, you know, but like I say, when I started it, there weren't many people doing this, and so it's gotten easier. since everybody's using the name, but before it used to be cumbersome and needed a lot of explanation.
Yeah. I should probably tell listeners that you're at the airport, and I'm guessing you're going through the check-in process.
Yeah.
Taking your shoes off and all that?
Oh, yeah. I'm having them inspect everything, so.
And trying to hold the cell phone at the same time.
Yeah, sorry about that. It's just
that's
the timing
all right.
really worked out badly. I thought I'd be in line for an hour and a half like I usually am, so.
Talk about Django Reinhardt and the whole thing of gypsy jazz.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting point. The style of playing this guitar is very, very different because of the way the gypsies play the guitar. It's completely different from the way Americans play guitar. Completely different. It's a completely different technique. And I've been doing this for quite a long time, and I'm finally now getting a handle on the technique. I tell my students that it's a lifestyle, not a good hobby.
Mm.
It just takes over your life if you want to learn to play this way.
Well, your own bio is really fascinating to read, and it's full of description of your process coming to learning how to play gypsy jazz. Why don't you give just a reduced version of what that process was like?
The reduced version is that I moved to France and tried to live there for a while just so that I could, you know, really observe and hang out with gypsies. And I finally did find some people who I could hang out with and study with. Not study with, you know, but I learned from them just by playing with them. And I've gone back to Europe several times to hang out with gypsies, and now when the gypsies come to America, I hang out with them. And there's no school to go to learn this style. The gypsies, they just learn from each other, and it's a family kind of a thing, because all gypsies think of themselves as a family, and almost all of them can trace their bloodline back to Django Reinhardt.
Mm.
So it's kind of weird to not be in the family and to be playing this kind of music. It almost shouldn't work, but for those of us that persevere, and I know I've spoken with Evan Perry about this, for instance, that those of us who persevere, we get a little bit closer, you know. We get a little bit closer, and with each generation of American guitarists, we all get a little bit closer. So.
Well, and as you went through different styles of music, through jazz, you know, sort of straight ahead jazz and folk and bluegrass and lots of other kinds of things, you found you finally had to come up with a group like this yourself, only to audition
yeah.
people and find out nobody knew how to play it.
Yeah,
so now you're the teacher.
Yeah, and I didn't want to do it half-assed. You know, I really wanted to do it like full on and do it right. And it was impossible to find people with that kind of dedication and experience. So yeah, I did wind up teaching people, and then I made some instructional DVDs years ago. In fact, I just made one that came out last year. So I'm still making these instructional DVDs to help people get, you know, a handle on it, because there's quite a lot to learn about playing the guitar in the gypsy style. It's quite deep.
Well, I want to, it just occurred to me as we're talking here that I have failed so far to tell our listeners why it is we're talking with you, and that is, first of all, we're talking with Paul Melling of the Hot Club of San Francisco. They're going to be in Charleston tonight at 7:30 at the Dowden Fine Arts Center doing a program called Silent Surrealism, which means that they're essentially accompanying some silent films. And I want to talk about that specifically in a few minutes, but I thought maybe let's hear another of your tunes just so we can get some more music on the show.
Great.
And this one's called Not So Fast, and I can't remember, is this tune Not So Fast?
Is the tune what?
Is the tune Not So Fast?
Actually, you'll see when you hear it. It's parts of it are not so fast, and parts of it are, oh yeah, that might be too fast.
So not so fast, but not too fast either, please. It's the Hot Club of San Francisco here on Live and Local. a tune called Not So Fast, played by the Hot Club of San Francisco. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, they're going to be in Charleston tonight at 7:30, an interesting program called Silent Surrealism. They're going to be accompanying some rare silent films. And Paul Melling, my guest for this portion, he's the leader of the Hot Club. And this is something that used to be commonly done in the early 20th century?
Yeah, in fact, Stephen Grappelli, who played with Django Reinhardt in the original Hot Club of France, he often said in interviews that one of the ways that he learned to improvise was by playing in the pit orchestra for silent films.
I've heard of pianists doing this commonly for a long time. Even Dmitri Shostakovich, for example, used to do that, but I never thought of it as a gypsy jazz thing.
Well, not necessarily gypsy jazz, although there is the possibility that gypsies did play this music, their music, to accompany films, because, as I say in the show, two of the films that we use, even though the films are made in America, were not found in America. The original prints were lost, but copies of the prints were found in Europe, and they were in the possession of gypsies who took them around and showed them for money. So the idea of these films having, you know, the connection between the films and the music is there are many connections, and that's one of them, is the fact that the gypsies actually had the films in their possession, and the fact that Stephen Grappelli learned to play the violin, not necessarily learned to play gypsy jazz, but learned to play the violin sitting in the pit orchestra for silent films. And a lot of jazz musicians learn to play jazz by improvising to the film, just sitting there in the orchestra.
So when did you have the idea to take up this tradition?
You know, I grew up listening to Django, and I always thought it was cool music, and I always wanted to play the music at a higher level, and I figured if I was patient, I would find people, and it didn't work out that way. And so at a certain point in my life, I just decided it was time to start a band. And as we discussed, I just started training people. And little by little, after about 5 years or so, people started coming to me. I didn't have to take out ads in the newspaper any longer. People actually started coming to me and saying, okay, I want to audition because I think I can do what you want me to do. And I understand what you need and blah, 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 blah. And it's definitely the quality of my band has really gotten better in 21 years. I've gotten better, and the quality of people playing in the band has gotten better, so it's all good.
And then what about the film idea?
Well, the film idea was I have a friend who I went to high school with that started the San Francisco Silent Film Festival, and I was always hitting him up to let me accompany a silent film. And so he said, well, here, why don't you look at some short films and consider, you know, just playing accompaniment, not necessarily scoring the film, but just accompanying the film. And that's more in the tradition of silent films, is to accompany the film and not necessarily make it like a soundtrack where every time somebody gets hit on the head, there's a musical note to correspond with that blow. You know, it's not like the way we think of music soundtracks today. It's really different. And that's why when it's being improvised, it's even that much more fun, because it's a surprise for us, and it's a surprise for the audience. And I think the audience can really feel that spontaneity. And that's all part of what makes it interesting. And I had the idea from talking to my friend about this, you know, accompanying the films. But I also thought it would be a really good marketing tool for us so that we could get invited to play at theaters that might not consider having a gypsy jazz band normally. So this has gotten us a foot in the door at a lot of different venues that might not consider having gypsy jazz.
Well, there are four films going to be featured in the show, right?
Yeah.
Ranging from one in 1912 called The Land Beyond the Sunset through 1930. It's a Bird, Charlie Bowers, and then there's one called Now You Tell One, Charlie Bowers. I don't know anything about those three. I assume The Fall of the House of Usher is the story I've heard of.
Yeah, it's based on the Edgar Allan Poe poem, and there were two films made in 1918 when, is it 1918? No, 1928 when The Fall of the House of Usher came out.
Yeah.
Two films of The Fall of the House of Usher. So sometimes people have seen one but not the other. This is the American one. The French version was a little under 2 hours, and our film is just about 20 minutes. So the American film is way more exotic than the French film. The French film is kind of literal, sticking to the book, the poem. our version is definitely impressionistic. It's very, very surreal in its interpretation of the poem.
Does that lend itself more to having your sort of music with it?
Yeah. In fact, we play some classical music throughout that film. We decided that the swing jazz, like Django Reinhardt style, wasn't quite good enough for Edgar Allan Poe. So we thought we would dial up a few classics. And we even threw in a very rare bolero that Django Reinhardt wrote that seemed to fit the mood of that film really well. So
it'll be particularly moody or impressionistic classical music?
Yes and yes.
Nailed it, huh? What about these two Charlie Bowers movies?
Charlie Bowers is an American contemporary of Charlie Chaplin. He's totally unknown in America except for a few, you know, fans. He's having a resurgence, but he's the guy whose films, he made 20 films in America. None of them have been found here, but 11 films were found in Europe, and all 11 of those films were found in the hands of gypsies. So that was, when I found that out, it just seemed like a natural tie-in for our kind of music with a show like this.
Well, it sounds like it would be a lot of fun, and I hope we can get some folks to go out and hear it. This was a pretty late addition to the Dowdna Fine Arts Center's calendar. At least I only heard about it pretty recently.
I hope we have a lot of people come out. Almost unanimous from audiences that we speak to that come to see the show, they're all super surprised about how fun it was and how surrealistic the films are, and just totally exceeds everybody's expectations, if I can say that modestly. So, well, I guarantee people won't be disappointed.
Well, I have no modesty issues, since I don't play in your band, in saying that your music is fantastic.
Thank you.
For that alone, people could go out and have a good time.
Very cool. Thanks.
It's tonight at 7:30, the Dowdna Fine Arts Center at the Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. And for more information, eiu.edu/Dowdna. And talking here with Paul Melling of the Hot Club of San Francisco, who will be accompanying those films and a show called Silent Surrealism. And let's go out on one more tune. Any introduction required for Swing This?
Yeah, it's just a little ditty that I wrote back when I was playing with Dan Hicks. It's based on one of his tunes, but it's totally my composition. And when I wrote this tune, Dan said, you know, you should be writing more tunes. So that was really cool, because he was my other big hero influence when I was a teenager, him and Django Reinhardt. So, yeah, Swing This.
Swing This with Hot Club of San Francisco. Have a safe flight.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Club of San Francisco here on Live and Local. You can hear them tonight along as they accompany some old silent films at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston. Show starts at 7:30. For more information, eiu.edu/Doudna, D-O-U-D-N-A. Here's some other events going on in our area. I'll squeeze in as many as I can. The Greater Decatur Chorale is performing three times this weekend, tonight at 7:30, and tomorrow also 7:30, and Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Decatur Civic Center Theater. The Jeff Helgeson Quintet is at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 5, followed by the Corn Desert Ramblers playing bluegrass. That's tonight at 9 o'clock. The Illinois Symphony Orchestra performs twice this weekend, tonight at 7:30 at St. Agnes Church in Springfield, and tomorrow at 7:30 at Second Presbyterian Church in Bloomington. Grassroots Revival are at Strawberry Fields in Urbana this evening at 5 o'clock. And tomorrow, it's the Illinois Wesleyan Jazz Festival starting at 12:45 at Westbrook Auditorium on the campus in Bloomington. Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra gives a program called The Legend of Liszt at the Krannert Center tomorrow night at 7:30. And a global transfer afterglow free show at the Krannert Center tomorrow evening with the trio Tarana playing Indian and East Asian music. The Foghorn String Band with the Dustbusters is presented by the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival at the Independent Media Center in Urbana Sunday night at 7 o'clock. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYLL-FM WYLL-FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana with translators, W266AF Urbana and W293AF Danville. Support comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting from 2 to 6 p.m. features a selection of wines from Chile and Argentina. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. Join us again for Monday's show. We'll be talking with Nicholas Temperley about his book about the Wesleys in Music of the Wesleys and a program focusing on that coming up in the following weekend. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Kevin Kelly for Live and Local. Have a great weekend.